Oh, I'm right here. Yes, we are live from Sharp Facets Gallery. And, you know, last week I was in Washington. In fact, I was headed to Washington when our Congressman Jeff Duncan was headed home. Jeff, I know that you lost your dad last week, and I'm so sorry to hear that. How are you doing?
Well, we're doing okay. I'm in Washington still this week, and you know, it's tough. There's going to be a void in our lives for quite a while. He was one of my heroes, and I was able to honor him yesterday from the House floor. And it's tough when you lose any loved one, but, you know, dads are special, and it's tough when you lose your father.
Absolutely. It's how did you honor him yesterday, Jeff?
Well, I went yesterday. I had a little time during a what they call special orders. It was after we concluded our legislative business. They do an hour-long special order, and I had a block of time there to recognize Bell Street Middle School, which won their 13th straight Science Olympiad.
Wow.
And so after I talked about Bell Street and those exemplary students and teachers and parents, I took a little bit of time to talk about my father.
Wow. That is terrific. And I know that for all the people I saw on Facebook, you certainly had a lot of people that were with you on this, going through all this.
Yeah, and I appreciate everybody's prayers and thoughts, and it's been overwhelming. The text messages and the emails and the Facebook messages and posts have been tremendous. So, and I'll give a shout out to Hospice of Greenwood County, and also Self Memorial Hospital. Just we had a fabulous experience and a very, very trying time, but I can't brag on them enough for the comfort they gave my dad and our family.
Yes, well, they do an excellent job. But we need to talk about some of the other things now that you're back up there in Washington. I wish we could have sat down, but you know what? I've decided I'm just going to come back up to Washington sometime soon, and I'm just going to see everybody and spend some time up there again.
Well, we'd love to have you, and if you do, just count on using our office here as a sort of a base of operations if you can.
All right. Well, that sounds great. But you have a lot going on. You've got a lot on your plate. First up, let's talk about the South Carolina Freedom Summit that is coming up on May 9th. That's not far away.
It's not, and we're excited about it. We're going to have a great slate of presidential contenders and leaders from all across the country coming. And it's on May 9th at the Peace Center in Greenville. And
is it sold out?
Yeah, it's sold out, but we also have an overflow room because we know people will be leaving throughout the day. This will last from about 9:30 until about 5:30, and lunch is provided. But we do have an overflow room with big screen TVs where people can watch and be comfortable. And as people leave and seats free up in the Peace Center, we're going to be moving people over. So you can sign up for that at scfreedomsummit.com, and we're going to have a great full day of conservatism and vision for America with these great leaders like Ted Cruz and Marco Rubio and Rick Perry and Donald Trump and Carly Fiorina and just so many different. Ben Carson's going to be there. It's just going to be a great, great day of talking about what the future looks like post-2016.
You know, Jeff, I know you've been talking to and you're watching everything. And we do have a huge field on the Republican side this time. Is there anybody at this moment that stands out to you?
Yeah, I just mentioned all of them.
I know, but anyone that you're saying, you know, I like the message there a lot, and I might be able to. I'm not going to say that you are committed to them, but you might be able to support that person.
Yeah, I'm not going there right now. I want them all to continue to come to the Freedom Summit. I've got a barbecue in August that... hopefully we're going to have a number of candidates come too, so we're going to stay neutral for a while, but I'm excited that we've got such a good field of visionary leaders, and I look forward to them helping South Carolina and shape their opinion about who they can get behind, and I look forward to them trying to help shape my opinion on who I can get behind. I'm just not ready to make that disclosure now.
You know, one of the things that is difficult, though, Jeff, out of all of them, and there is a good field out there, it's really only one person, isn't it, that's going to end up with the whole enchilada. In some cases, it looks like there could be a couple of them that could be real good together, doesn't it?
It does. You know, I spent a lot of time talking with a number of these out in Iowa. I was at the Iowa Freedom Summit, and I've spent time talking with a number of them since we've gotten back in January. And I'm constantly amazed that their hearts are in the right place. They want to do us right to try to reclaim a lot of our personal liberties and shrink the size and scope of government in the post Obama days and really reverse some of these bad policies, whether it's foreign policy, whether it's internal immigration policy or spending and debt. Most of them I talk to have great ideas on that. Now, they would just need to hone those ideas, and they need to sell those to the American people. And we as the voting public need to get behind someone and make sure that the Republicans win the White House in 2016.
Yeah. You know, when we look at this futuristically, it to me looks like that it's almost a life and death situation, that we do get a change in, we do go from Democratic to Republic, particularly since it looks like Hillary's going to be the nominee.
Well, you know, President Obama, when he was candidate, Obama said that they were going to fundamentally transform the United States of America. And I don't know what people thought about that back in early November of 2008, but I know what I saw, and I know what we're seeing. We're seeing a true fundamental transformation of the country. It's incursion on personal liberty, but also an expanded government. We see things like the EPA and the IRS are out of control in a lot of ways. We see failed foreign policy over and over and over. We see things like the former Secretary of State having a private email server so that she can keep things from the American people, whether it was things about Benghazi or whether it's about the Russian uranium deal, whether it's about a mining sweetheart deal for a relative, or whether it's a solicitation of private donations for the Clinton Foundation from foreign countries that she was currently working with as Secretary of State. It all looks bad. And so we've got a lot of work to do to win the trust of the American people. And also I go back to shrinking the size and scope of government, lessening government's involvement in the lives of everyday Americans.
Yeah, it just blows your mind, doesn't it, every day?
It does. I mean, we're now talking about drone strikes again, where Americans were killed. And, you know, I don't necessarily, it doesn't raise my ire when it's a drone strike in a theater of war where the person was an incidental casualty, whether they're Americans or anyone else, because that's collateral damage. It's not like we targeted that person. And it's a little different than Al-Awlaki, where we targeted him, and he was an American citizen, and there's all the conversation about you know, due process and Fourth Amendment and in that issue. But when it's an American that's an incidental casualty to an airstrike, whether it was a drone strike or an F-15 strike, they were in a theater of war, and those casualties are going to happen. If we want to defeat the enemy, we're going to have collateral damage, and we've got to accept that. We try as Americans not to have that. We try to have surgical strikes and just target the enemy. But in a time of war, and if we're really going to defeat this group called ISIS, which is hiding not in a military base, not on a front line like a nation state facing another nation state like we saw in World War II, these guys are terrorists. They're entrenched in the general population. If we're going to take those out, there will be collateral damage if we're going to win.
Yes, and what about what the what John Kerry walked away with the Iran deal? I mean, I know that Congress is going to be able to have some opportunity to look at it, but what do you think?
Well, we had a hearing this week about the Iran deal, and we had former weapons inspectors from Iraq. We had a number of other leaders, and really the Republicans and Democrats were on the same page on the Foreign Affairs Committee for almost 100%, but it was a real high percentage that we can't trust Iran, that, you know, this framework of a deal isn't very good because you can't trust Iran. And the Iranian leader of their Quds force, their Revolutionary Guard, said that we're not going to allow weapons inspectors on military bases because to do that would be a disgrace and we're just not going to allow them to go there. So if we can't look in every spot where we think Iran is trying to build a nuclear weapon or components of that or having centrifuges or storing certain components, then we're really not going to stop Iran from this effort to get a nuclear weapon. And I believe the American people are with us on this. I firmly believe the American people do not want Iran to get a nuclear weapon, and they're not behind the president on this this what is apparently a bad deal.
So, where does that leave us as far as the sanctions, though, Jeff?
I'm sorry, one more time?
Where does that leave us as far as the sanctions?
Well, you know, Congress will have an opportunity somehow. Honestly, I think the Senate has full powers in the Constitution to approve treaties, and this deal has every semblance of a treaty, but we're going to have an ability to stop the lifting of sanctions, I do believe. I think we have the only ability to stop lifting of U.S. sanctions. And so there's going to be some avenues for Congress to play a role in this to make sure that the administration doesn't sell the American people out with a bad deal, and really the free world out with a bad deal with Iran. And I will go beyond that, that if this deal looks like it's not working or sanctions aren't working or whatever, I believe there are other countries around the world that will do things different than sanctions. And, you know, whether that's Israel, whether that's Saudi Arabia or someone else, even the Saudis do not want to see Iran get a nuclear weapon. And there's this huge misunderstanding of people when they think about the Arab world and the Islamic world. They mistakenly lump Iran in the Arab world. Iranians aren't Arab, they're Persian. They do have the same religion. That's the only commonality. But there's a different version of Shia and Sunni religion within the Muslim world. So the Iranians are Persian. The Arab world and the Persian world historically have never gotten along. There's distrust. And that's why you see the Saudis, even though there's a Sunni-Shia issue as well, the Saudis don't trust the Iranians either.
What about though? Where is you know, the Speaker of the House Boehner on this? You know, we constantly see him. I don't know. He doesn't seem to come across real strong on House issues that we've had out there. Where do you think he is on this one?
And I can't answer that. I'm not sure.
Well, that's not a good answer right there, is it, Jeff? That says a lot right there.
Yeah, it does. I can tell you where I am on it. I can tell you where I believe the Foreign Affairs Committee is. I can tell you where I believe some other members that I've had conversations with. But short of that, I mean, beyond that, I can't tell you because I'm not sure.
Okay. Now, as far as where we're headed with the Homeland Security and with the immigration, you know, we were up there last week to talk about that. We did, of course, have you coming over. Any thoughts that you have? I mean, we're already hearing that the kids are going to start coming across the border. We had several conversations with ranchers that were living down there on the border. One of the ones we talked to have even formed their own volunteer border patrol. What are you seeing and what are you thinking that we need to be going on this?
Well, I spent a couple of weeks ago, I spent time in Panama at the Summit of the Americas, and I led a congressional delegation as chairman of the Western Hemisphere Subcommittee on Foreign Affairs to that summit with the intent purpose of discussing this issue and other Western Hemisphere issues with leaders of Latin American countries. And we were able to meet with 8 different presidents. And 9 if you count our own president, which I'll talk about in just a second. But we had the opportunity to talk with the president from El Salvador, the president of Guatemala, and the president of Honduras about these issues. And, you know, they're trying to do everything they can within their own country to stop the influences that are causing the children to go there. But we were also able to relay how we feel and our constituents feel about what we see with unaccompanied children. The fact of the matter is, as the weather warms up, you're going to see an increase in the unaccompanied children coming to our southern border, trying to come into this country. because President Obama and the immigration policies that he's put forth have made it attractive if they know they can't be deported. And so Vice President Biden and President Obama have both advocated for a large sum of money and foreign aid to the Northern Triangle countries that I mentioned, El Salvador, Honduras, and Guatemala. And I don't disagree with putting some money down there to try to help these presidents change some dynamics within their country. I think there's a difference in opinion on how much that should be. There are ways that foreign aid works. But while I was in Panama, and I had the opportunity to talk to President Obama, and there's a picture on Facebook that I posted of that conversation. And part of the conversation we had in several minutes was about that money. And I said, Mr. President, I said, we probably agree on the concept of trying to help the Northern Triangle countries. We're going to disagree on the amount. But bottom line is there's got to be some accountability. And he said, absolutely, there's got to be accountability because too much money has gone missing in the past, which I thought was an interesting comment coming from the President of the United States, acknowledging that in the past, foreign aid has been siphoned off by certain rogue leaders, not saying these presidents in these countries, but I'm just talking historically, I think he was as well, that American foreign aid money has not gotten to where the rubber meets the road because leaders like Charles Taylor in Liberia and others have siphoned off money for their own ill-gotten gains. And we've got to make sure there's accountability, that if we do provide American tax dollars in foreign aid, that it gets to where the rubber meets the road and it makes some changes to stop whatever's causing these children to flee north.
Well, what about the aspect of just sending these children back, Jeff? What about sending them back to the embassy, if nothing else? I mean, you hear conversations about that all the time.
Absolutely, and the majority of people I talk to here in Congress feel like we do need to send the children back home. There's a cost involved with that, which I'm fine with paying that cost, because I think the cost of having those children stay here with social services and the drain on the states, and that's really a big part of the court case that's going on right now over these policies, is just what it cost the individual states when these children do locate there. But we should send them back home, and we've got plenty of military aircraft. They're coming out of theater from Afghanistan and Iraq, C-130s. They're very, comfortable. They're not plush, but they serve the purpose for transportation. If it's good enough to transport our troops into theaters like Iraq or in Baghdad or Kabul, then they're good enough to transport these children back home to their home countries. And nothing would send the right signal like little Johnny or little Susie showing up back at home after mom and dad just spent $7,000 or $8,000 of their money to try to send them north to America, and then they knock on the door and they've returned. That sends a right signal, and that'll put a stop to this.
And what's the possibility of that happening, though, Jeff?
Well, some of it is happening, but when you hear stories of these airplanes only being 40% full, when we've got a large number of children coming across our border, we're failing somewhere. And so congressional oversight's got to make sure that if we're going to do these flights to Guatemala or Honduras, that they make sure that they're full and that there are enough flights to take enough of these children back. And so I think you're going to see more and more conversations in Washington about doing that, because that's the right thing.
Absolutely. And now on a more local level, you and Mike Pitts, a very good friend, served together in the House down here in South Carolina. Mike Pitts yesterday got a bill that would allow South Carolina residents to carry concealed weapons without a permit, got approval in the state house down there yesterday. Now, it still has to go to the Senate. It says that the measure eliminates a requirement that gun owners get a concealed weapons permit in order to carry a firearm, and it was attached to a separate gun bill. It passed as a vote of 81 to 27. What do you think about the fact of doing away with the concealed weapons permit? Now, you still have to go through the background, when you buy a gun, none of that changes. It's just whether you should have to have a permit to carry a concealed weapon in today's world.
Well, first off, Mike and I aren't good friends. We're best friends.
Okay.
And he's a brother in Christ and one of my best friends in life. you know, Mike's heart's in the right place. I think he believes in the United States Constitution and gives us the right to keep and bear arms, regardless of whether those are concealed or not. States have stepped in and said, you know, if you're going to carry, we'd like to have you have at least a little bit of training and a further background check in order to carry concealed. That's kind of where we've gotten to. I think this is a part of a bigger effort to expand the ability of states like South Carolina to have reciprocity with other states to allow South Carolinians who travel to be able to carry in the state of Georgia even. There's been a lot of pushback because our requirements are different from state to state, but it comes down to, I think, part of a bigger effort to say, all right, well, I think the ultimate goal is what I'm trying to say, Ann, is to allow broader reciprocity. I think that's where the General Assembly will probably get to. I haven't had any conversations with Mike. I'm trying to infer a lot of this.
Sure.
But there's a big effort across the nation. It's not just South Carolina. Across the nation, to get constitutional carry that says the Constitution gives us the right to carry anyway. The states have muddied the water with their permit requirements, but honestly, the Constitution gives us the right anyway. That's not just in South Carolina. That's going on all across the nation. So I think this is just pieces and parts of a much broader issue and effort.
Well, you know, I think that's fine, but I think we need to have gun safety classes that people should take, Jeff. I'm a little concerned about everybody just being out there packing and not knowing how to use a gun. I don't care whether it's a concealed weapon permit or not, but shouldn't we have some requirement for some gun safety classes?
Yeah, well, when I came along, and I don't know about you, I'm much older than you, but when I came along, we took gun safety in school as part of PE or health. I mean, it was firearm safety was part of it. And, you know, girls, guys, and of ages in that particular junior high school had to take the gun safety classes. And I think that's important. I think we should. And because you never know when these children are going to stumble across a firearm.
Correct.
And it could be left on a counter by a relative, or they could be in come out from under a seat in a car in another state where they allow that. There's just no way of knowing where children are going to come across firearms. If they have the ability to know, A, I'm not supposed to touch that to get an adult, or just basic gun safety to know which end of the gun is the bad part that the bullet comes out of, that most dangerous, and you point that in a safe direction. Or if you are hunting or shooting, that you know your target and you know what's beyond your target, because that projectile doesn't always hit your target and sometimes travels beyond. And so those are just simple gun safety things that we ought to be teaching in our schools.
I couldn't agree with you more. Maybe that's the answer. And my last and final question, what do you feel about Loretta Lynch as Attorney General now?
I'm sorry, one more time?
Loretta Lynch being Attorney General, what do you feel about that?
Well, I called Senator Graham back in probably early February, and asked him before the vote came up in the committee, and asked him to vote no because, if we as Republicans disagree with some of the policies of the administration, then the Constitution gives the United States Senate only a check and balance on what the executive branch is doing, and it's called advice and consent, and of approving nominations for cabinet-level positions such as this. And so I called Lindsay and I said, look, we disagree with the president on immigration and executive amnesty and all these other things, and if we're going to have any pressure points on the administration to make some changes and stop some of the bad things that we think they're doing, this is one of them. So I would urge you to vote no or hold up the confirmation of Loretta Lynch. And he said he was inclined to vote for her. He was ready just to get it over with and move on. And I went back to the thing. I said, Senator, I said, one of the checks and balances the Constitution gives you, as a Senate only, I'm not in the Senate, is advice and consent. I would urge you to put a check on the executive branch. And we see how he voted. So I'm disappointed, but I did have an opportunity to, I think, relay the concerns of my constituents in the 3rd District about Loretta Lynch and about this administration. So we saw how the vote came down yesterday. I'm disappointed, but now we're going to have to try to work within the system of Loretta Lynch being the Attorney General.
Absolutely. Well, Congressman Jeff Duncan, I always appreciate you calling in and letting us know what's going on. Thanks so much for calling this morning. God bless you.
Ann, so much. Thank you so much. God bless you as well. I love Ann. I love the I Love Ann show. And we will talk soon.
All right. Sounds great. Thanks so much, Jeff.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.